Welcome back to the Our Time Show, the show by Watch Geeks for Watch Geeks. I'm Victor Marks.
I'm Nicholas De Leon.
And I'm Ricky from Scottish Watches, apparently.
Apparently.
Well.
Wonderful.
Apparently so, yes.
Yeah.
I've managed to sneak out of the country, come across to America.
Is that even allowed?
Come through all your defences, climbed the wall, and here I am. You did make that wall, didn't you? That hand.
We're talking about it.
It's been on the go for a while.
Parts of it happened. Happened, yeah.
Oh, well. I'm here now, so how are you guys doing?
I am healthy, which is kind of a statement these days.
I am not too bad. I've been away for a few weeks. Regular listeners may notice. I'm sure they were asking, where's Nicholas? Where's our friend?
Where's the podcast?
Well, I had some personal matters to attend in Puerto Rico, a family thing, but I'm back in New York now, so all is well.
So how was prison in Puerto Rico?
Prison in Puerto Rico was delightful. They serve rice and beans. It's like everything else in the island, just rice and beans and horse racing.
But they let you out amazingly.
Yeah, they let me out. It was fine. It is funny to go. You know, obviously New York, it's the dead of winter. It's just dark and cold and dumb. And you go to Puerto Rico, it's like, oh, it's summer. It's 85 and sunny and like nice. So I don't know why my parents left. It's like, guys, it's nice here. Why did you come to New York?
You're using those crazy measurements like Fahrenheit. No one understands what that is.
Oh, yes, 85. Sorry. 85 and is, I don't know, it's like 30-ish.
Yes. 29.4, yeah.
Yeah. Quite warm. But good. Otherwise, I wore, and not to, you know, I wore my G-Shock a lot when I went down there. It was kind of an unplanned trip. I was like, well, I need something sturdy. I'm not going to be too fussy about what I wear. So I put on my solar power G-Shock, and that served quite well after I adjusted the time zone. But yeah, I wasn't too worried about getting it scratched or bumped. I could take it in the ocean for a quick little dip. It was like a commercial, like an Instagram reel for G-Shock. And you know, they don't pay me, they don't know who I am, but I think it did a pretty good job. And then while I was down there, one of my uncles has the stainless steel Apple Watch with the Sport Loop. I don't have the stainless steel Apple Watch, but it did inspire me to buy the Sport Loop. So now I have the kind of navy blue Sport Loop, and I've been wearing that all week, kind of a rekindling of maybe not love affair, but like wearing the Apple Watch a little bit this week. So
interesting.
That's me for the past couple weeks. And again, I'm sure folks were worried, but everything's okay.
So there's been this argument that the Apple Watch is not a watch. And I'm sure you've heard that, Ricky.
Oh, yeah.
What's your stance?
I think it is a watch. If it tells the time and it sits on your wrist, it's a watch. And my co-host, Dave Sharp, he's an avid Apple fan. He's bought every iteration and every version and every variant of every product Apple have ever made, going back to the Apple II. So he has got every series of Apple Watch, and he double wrists. I don't have an Apple Watch because I was probably one of the first folks to decide to get a smartwatch back in the day when Pebble came out, and it was a big Kickstarter.
I interviewed that guy for that Kickstarter. Yeah, Eric. That was great. Eric. Eric. I'm sure I have the interview in my old Google Docs.
Yeah, I met him a few times. Nice guy.
Yeah, he was very nice, yeah.
Well, I loved the idea of the product, and when it came out, it didn't work properly because iOS on the iPhone, obviously, it didn't have proper integration with Bluetooth and notifications. So it was more a hindrance than a help. But then once I'd played with that and then sold it on, I just thought, you know what? I don't want to be at the behest of my phone and notifications. I want to check my email when I want to check my email. I don't want notifications of an Instagram message, a comment, and constantly be breaking my concentration. So I don't use any smart devices at all. Don't have an Alexa, don't have a Google Dot or an Echo or anything like that, and I don't have a smartwatch. But I do understand why they're good. And when we had Jean-Claude Biver on our show maybe about a year ago there for 200th episode, he was championing the Apple Watch and the ecosystem because it's got young people back into wearing something on the wrist. And when inevitably, after a year or two, the battery dies or the software slows down, they look at it and go, well, I could buy another Apple Watch. Or, what's that Tudor? What's a G-Shock? What's a this, that, or the other?
Yeah.
So it opens people into the whole wearing a watch ecosystem again.
That's exactly what happened to me. And you know, I left, again, it was an unplanned thing. I left, I have an article in Hodinkee, believe it or not. I have a byline in Hodinkee. I wrote about my Apple Watch and how while I was working at Vice Media, I put on a lot of weight because it's a very stressful place. But I use the Apple Watch to lose a bit of weight, and how I talked about how the Apple Watch introduced me to watches again. You know, I wore watches as a kid all through high school, had a quartz, whatever. But like the Apple Watch was like, oh yeah, watches are a thing. And I know I've explained this in the past, but like I'm longtime friends with John, who's not here today. And I was like, oh, I know John has a watch site. And so I just started kind of poking around the watch world as a result of the Apple Watch. And so I wonder how many folks are in that position where it's like, oh, the Apple Watch is cool. You get notifications, or maybe you do some fitness stuff. I use it mostly for cycling around New York. And then I was like, oh, yeah, watches. And so I do wonder how many folks are getting acquainted with the hobby literally as a result of the Apple Watch, which is kind of funny because the Apple Watch, like we just hinted at, is it a watch? Is it real? Is it watch enough? It feels like a gateway drug for a lot of folk. Well, at least me. And I know I'm not the only person with that experience.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I mean, if you look back in history, back 40 years, you had Seiko with her TV watch. You had David Hasselhoff as Michael Knight in Knight Rider with the coolest watch in the world. You had Dick Tracy with the watch that was a communicator.
The wrist radio.
They've always been smart in sci-fi and on TV. So it is a watch.
Yeah. Now, the weird thing about Pebble, because I also had a couple of the Pebble watches, was that it took about a year and a half, 2 years for it to really get good and hit its stride. And the best thing that I ever experienced with it was its calendar function. Its notifications for upcoming events was perfect. And Apple has yet to actually reproduce that. And this is something I kind of found with smartwatches, is that each one that was out there had one thing about it that they really nailed and failed at the rest. And those things have sometimes been lost, right? There was one watch out there that was done by a guy who's a friend of the show. I'm blanking on his name right now, which is terrible. He made a smartwatch that was all about being able to operate the watch without having to necessarily have your eyes on it. That the buttons always had the same function no matter what, and that it was
right.
It was a good theory. There was the Pebble that had calendaring nailed. The things that Pebble got right were calendaring, and it got the openness that allowed other people to write applications or faces for it.
That was good.
Yeah.
I loved it. I had a face. I had the Pebble, I think Time Steel, one of the later models.
Yep.
And I had some face that I bought from their app store for like, I don't know, $2 or $3. I loved it. I was really into that thing for about a year, actually. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. The openness and that little community they had was really cool.
They had developers that were able to take the output of a Dexcom G5, G6 kind of continuous glucose monitor and put your blood sugar real time on the watch face. And that's something that Apple has talked about doing, but has yet to actually release, right? That's something that is a part of one of the Dexcom apps that may work on the Apple Watch, but it's not exactly nearly as refined as what Pebble had going then, because they were open to people doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Intel bought one once. They had a watch company that they bought, and that one had the very best way of displaying heart rate. So there are things that each one of these things has excelled at that Apple has not quite picked up upon, but because they are the 800-pound gorilla, they're the winning one right now.
Is that a case of they don't have access to the patent technology?
I'm not sure. I think that it's... You know, what they've gone through is a lot of years figuring out what their focus should be. When the thing first launched, like every other Apple product, and your co-host on your show would know this, right? Would talk about this. They always were able to say, this is what this thing is, this is what it does, and this is why you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see yourself in that product, right? The first iPhone was the web, the iPod, and the best phone you'll ever have, with the best visual voicemail you'll ever have if you happen to be in America when it launched.
Yeah.
And you could look and say, I want the web in my pocket, or I want a touchscreen iPod, or I'm sick of using buttons to navigate through voicemail. I want to be able to use my finger and slide and skip and hear them asynchronously out of order, right? You could say, I see myself in that product. When the watch launched, they had 40 minutes of drawing smiley faces and sending your heart rate to someone.
Oh, yeah.
Viewing a garage door open. And they weren't really sure why you were going to do it. But they had eBay on there and Amazon. And one of the famous things that happened was someone accidentally ordered an Xbox by tapping on their watch face. So it took them a while to figure out what it was for. And I think they're still working through that.
I remember their initial Apple Watch presentation. I think Stephen Lynch, like he was
Kevin,
like,
it Kevin Lynch.
Kevin Stephen Lynch is a musician. Kevin Lynch was like, it could do a million things. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, but why?
Yeah. It was very like scattershot, that first revision. My recollection too is like a very scattershot, that first revision, kind of here's a thing. And then they really kind of honed in on some of the fitness and health stuff. I know Tim Cook has said that, like, you know, Apple's legacy will be its health initiatives, you know, looking 100 years down the line.
But is that not just Apple all over? Whenever they release something, like when the first iPad came out, it was a great idea and people took to it initially, but the first iteration was crap.
Well,
the first iPhone was completely crap versus the Nokia N95 that I had previous to that. And it was the 3G that came in.
I had a 6682 and I had a couple of other ones that were Symbian. And actually, they were crap compared to the iPhone. The iPhone didn't have MMS. It didn't have a true live turn-by-turn GPS. But it had what mattered at the time. Now, the iPad, at least they told you what it was for, right? The iPad was very much for, you need a bigger screen experience, but you're not on a laptop. You want to lie back. You want to relax. You want to do some reading. You want to have
That's
this kind of casual computing experience. And they told you why. And if that wasn't for you, that's fine. But at least they told you what it was for.
Not what I'm getting at. I'm getting at the first iteration is always like a beta test. The first one is never, the second one is always the one where you're like, ah.
There's definitely there, but yeah.
I think part of it is that they work so much in private that their internal testing is very much, you know, they release to the world and then find out more.
Or Gizmodo steal something out of a bar, allegedly.
God, I remember that,
What a cluster that was. Okay, but we should talk about more traditional watches for a little bit, don't you think?
That sounds like a good idea. I mean, wondering where this was going.
Me either. So, what is your favorite watch?
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Easy to tell you the answer to that one, because it's the watch I'm wearing the most at the moment. And that is my long-awaited, finally delivered Orage Tourbillon 1.
Okay, tell me about it.
Do you know anything about this brand or this watch?
Tell me all about it.
We do not have enough time to tell you all about it. But it is a... a story that has been going on for over 2 years. 2 years ago, almost to the day or to the week, we had the guys from Orage come across from Switzerland to meet us in Scotland. This was before the COVID. And we recorded a video because we used to do YouTube stuff as well as obviously the podcast. So we would hire a studio, set up multiple cameras and record, in essence, a chat show. And we called it The Talk Show, T-O-C-K. Which was quite cool at the time. And it was really good. So we brought these guys over. They explained about the technology, what they were doing, why they were doing things, and they were going to be launching a Tourbillon. Their own, not in-house at that moment in time, but it was Swiss-made and it was going to be very inexpensive. Fast forward a few months, and the company that was going to supply them with the technology and the movements, Le Jouperet, decided to stiff them and say, no, we're not going to supply these anymore. So they were millions and millions of dollars into this for development, research, promotions. And they thought, well, you know what? We've designed two of our own movements already, the K1 and the K2 micro rotor. The K1 has appeared in England in a different watch most recently from Bremont. But they said, we're going to do it ourselves. We're going to take that technology and move forward with it. Fast forward another year and a bit, and working in partnership with various people, including Armin Strom, they released, finally, the Tourbillon 1, and I got mine just about 3 weeks ago there, and it's fantastic. I have dropped it by accident. It still works great, still got fantastic timekeeping. It's like 1 second a day. It's got 120 hours of power reserve. Just love it. It's my aesthetic as well, the way the design looks. It's unlike any other watch that I've seen. And some people hate it. Some people like it. But you can't beat it for value. And I know there are now cheaper Swiss tourbillons, but if you look at them under micro magnification or on the wrist, they do not stand up whatsoever. So this is my favorite watch of the moment.
Excellent. That is really nice to hear. You know, it's so enlightening when you hear what someone enjoys, right? What did you love before this?
Before this, it would change. Something I've said on our show, and it's true, I stopped buying watches probably about a year ago there, because probably like yourselves, when you're steeped in the industry and you've got brands sending you things to try out, it's almost like you're a motor journalist. So you don't have to buy a Ferrari or a Porsche or a Maserati, because every weekend there's a different car on the driveway. So every week there was a different watch on the wrist, and it was kicking my dopamine, and it was just making me love the hobby because there was new stuff coming in. It didn't matter if it was a Signum with a meteorite dial on bronze at maybe $500, or a Zelos with a Ford carbon bezel and dial, or it could be a Ulysses Nordan Blast. It was always something new and something different. So it always changed up until, as I say, a month ago there when I finally got this, and I've been pretty much wearing this solidly since, to the detriment of all the other brands that I've sent watches in for review, unfortunately.
Yeah, I understand. Now, this is what, about 7,000 Swiss francs? Is that right?
Yep, 7.5 plus taxes and shipping. So it just depends where it's going in the world. And the one I've got is the Cosc one as well. Not that it needs it, because as I say, it's like plus 1 second a day. And it's such a low production run that they're all hand assembled and regulated and tested before they go out. But yeah, 7,500 Swiss francs plus taxes.
Okay. And it's got sort of a lattice dial to it.
Yeah, it's... They do different versions. They've stopped selling this. It was a limited order window, and now they're creating and delivering to customers. So they don't sell it anymore, but they will be working on something else next year, they tell me. And they did different coloured dials. And the one I went for is the dark grey with the blue handset and the blue rear plate. But they did one with a blue front, and it looked like a blue waffle. So we would tell people on the podcast to go and Google blue waffle and look in Google images, and they'd find exactly what we're talking about. And people did do that stupidly. But it's not just the arrangement of the waffle and the lattice, like you say. I've got it in front of me here just now, because I didn't know if we were going to be on video when we're chatting. But the way they've got the edges are polished, that when you rotate it, or even when it's on wrist, it catches your eye like diamonds, like a really nice diamond ring. No matter which way you rotate it, there's always a polished edge catching the light and reflecting it into your eyeballs.
Yeah, that makes such a difference.
Mm.
You know, I've seen that even on affordable watches, where you can have one with hands that are perfectly flat versus ones that have a bit of a bevel to them, and the difference in catching the light is huge.
Oh yeah, it's incredible. And for the price point, again, it's something that I'm very proud to have, because I think there's only about 100 of them in the world. This is a watch that I wore when I went across to Dubai Watch Week. Because when you go to something like that, you know that everybody you bump into is going to be wearing a Richard Mille or a Jacob & Co. And there was not another Arage watch, definitely not another Arage Tourbillon in the whole place. So it makes you feel good when you've got something that isn't dramatically expensive. You know, relatively speaking, all watches are probably expensive because we don't need one. But versus, as I say, 100 grand plus up to 10 million, etc. I was quite chuffed to wear this. And it got a lot of attention as well over there from the journalists and the folks that we bumped into.
Nice. Now, what did you see at Dubai that really caught your eye?
Oh, everything. Everything. It was just hard to explain
had
to anybody.
Had you been before? Was this your first time?
Never.
And what was the vibe like, given the state of the world? You know, this is what I you know, all the, what's the other watch conventions were kind of canceled and stuff. Like, what was the vibe like? Yeah, I'm just curious.
It was super relaxed. I had never been that far away from home in my life. Up until a couple of years ago, I never did any travel. I had no inclination to do so. And the first time in recent history that I actually left Scotland or the UK was to go to Baselworld. So that was like going to, it was like going to your first music event, your first concert, your first gig, your first comedy show, the first movie you've seen in the cinema, that kind of experience. And I didn't think anything would top it. And I'm relatively new to this hobby. 5 years, probably in a week's time, it'll be my 5-year anniversary of buying a luxury wristwatch and getting into this. But Dubai was just another level, another experience. It'd be like you go into your first fun fair in the local town centre when you're a kid, and then you go to Disney World. Dubai was like Disney World for watch enthusiasts. We were walking around. I went with Dave, my co-host, and we met people that we've spoken to online, like Ariel Adams, met him in real life, Tim Mosso, met him, Waco, all these folks. But you were just walking through this area. It's almost like a miniature village that they create in the DIFC only for Dubai Watch Week. Everything that's built and everything, it looks as if it's been situated there. Rolex boutique is sitting there. It looks like a genuine Rolex boutique, the same kind of patterns and build construction, but then they dismantle it after a week and it's not there anymore. But you're walking around and walking straight into Francois Benema from AP, the CEO. You're bumping into Maximilian Busser from MBNF, Felix from Urwerk. They're just walking past you and you can stop them and chat to them about watches without a PR person or a lawyer or a marketing executive constantly watching everything that you ask and everything you say. It was totally open. It's open to the public as well. People don't realize this. It's not a trade show. It's not a media and press event. It's a watch event. You could go on the website and say, I want to come. They would email you free of charge a ticket to enter. And all you'd have to do is fly there or get there somehow. And people did. People listened to our podcast. And there was an 18-year-old kid from down in England who just jumped on a plane, got a hotel and went for the week and came back and said it was the best thing ever. There was photographs of him with Konstantin Chaikin and the Joker watches and the Minion watch. And he says, day one, life complete. I've met my horological heroes. And that's what it's all about.
Nice. That's very cool.
Very cool.
So sorry, you asked me a question about my favourite watches. All of them. But I liked, for fun and games, the Minion watch. I thought that was brilliant because he really does not care. He just does what he loves. And people might know him for doing the Joker watch and now the Minion watch and the one-eyed selfie watch. But he also does all these massive grand complications. So that was great. What else did we have a look at? I had a look at the Singer Reimagined. They had the Track 1 Bold, which is an aluminium ceramic composite with gold, gold everything on it. Everything on it was gold and black. And that just stood out to me. It was, I think it's an Agener movement that's inside it, same as some of the Moser watches. That was just brilliant. And again, you're on a stand in a booth with somebody who you don't know and you're talking away. And then you find out that's the guy that owns the company. Or that's the watchmaker that designed and built this watch that's sitting in front of you. You don't get that. And we actually took a little bit of a pot shot at our friends at Hodinkee because their podcast that came out after Dubai Watch Week downplayed everything and said that it was small, it was a tent, you could walk through it in 30 seconds. There was nobody of merit on the stands. It was just local sales agents. And I'm thinking, that is not the truth. Look at the photos that we've uploaded, the video, the people. We recorded 12 interviews at Dubai Watch Week to include in future episodes of our podcast. That's how good it was. And I just can't wait to get back in a couple of years' time because it's every second year. And you asked about how did people feel about COVID and the current situation.
Yeah.
Until the latest train variation that has kicked in just before Christmas, nobody was being... They weren't being stupid. People were, you know, you've got that built in standing back from someone when you're speaking to them, unless you know them and you know where they've been. There was a lot of that. Indoors, people were wearing masks. I think in Dubai, you're supposed to wear a mask outdoors as well. Half the time people did, half the time they didn't. If they saw a group of people that weren't, you know, they felt a little bit as if they shouldn't. But no, everyone was respectful. Everyone was safe. There was hand cleansing stations everywhere. And it felt more comfortable. Because it was out in the open, it was warm. It wasn't as if it was a cold environment like going to Switzerland in the springtime or something where naturally, you know, people are colder, they're catching bugs and things anyway. Wasn't like that at all. Didn't spot anybody that had a cough, a cold, a sneeze or any complications while they were away. And actually my health improved when I was away. Came back to Scotland and I'm dying off again.
Sure. I guess Dubai kind of took place right as Omicron was kind of creeping up. That's an interesting timing. I'm just curious, like, you know, I think we've all roughly had 2 years of kind of this stuff, various states of like not having a great time, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of the bigger, you know, CES, the big tech convention is next month. And we have someone from my day job, Consumer Reports, he's going in person. And I kind of think he just wants to get out of the house is my sense. But yeah, it's interesting to see kind of how folks are tiptoeing into society again or whatever.
You're right.
Well, CES is one of those shows where John and I have traditionally gone in years past and we're both skipping it this year. I think we skipped it last year as well. It's I'm still hesitant, right? I feel like we're not ready for these kinds of things yet.
It's a tricky one. And I've been double vaccinated, so I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I've also had COVID and survived it, so I've got really good natural immunity. But I just feel as if what seems to be around just now, it's different across the world, but on my doorstep in Scotland, and I speak to lots of different, I mentioned the podcast, well, I speak to doctors, nurses, anesthesiologists, care home workers, funeral directors. I've got a good proximity of people that do different things in different industries that are all kind of linked. And none of them say it's quite as bad as it's made out in the media. And the new variant that's out just now, I've got friends, again, listeners to the show across the world, people I communicate with, and everyone's kind of scratching their head going, this new one's almost more diluted and watered down, so more people are getting it, allegedly. I'm not a doctor, physician, put in your disclaimers, but more people seem to get it, and it's like a small cold. My girlfriend and her family have got it, and none of them have had any issues apart from they've had to blow their nose and perhaps one of them's lost their sense of taste and smell. It's not as bad as a year back when people were on ventilators, or a year and a half ago when people were dying off left, right and centre. So I think maybe Pfizer shareholders were just looking for a Christmas bonus this year. Who knows?
Oh, man. That's a hot take. That's a spicy take.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay. I was set to go to London a few days ago, and I canceled it because I was a little apprehensive.
Have you had it yet?
No. I've gotten three shots. No, I've gotten three shots. I'm good with that part.
Yeah, in Puerto Rico, I was down there for about 2 weeks. They take it very seriously. I don't know that there's a ton of cases currently, but it's a small island and they don't have a ton of hospital capacity. So like you go into any restaurant, you have to show your either a vaccination record or like a negative test within even if you want to go to like a Burger King or something.
Yeah.
They're super serious about it, which is, it's not necessarily the case. I'm in suburban New York. It's not the case around here, but yeah, down there they are. You know, again, understandably, they don't have a ton of hospital capacity. So
it's, I was just before recording this show, I had to rush back and I stopped in at a local store just to pick up some things. And half the people were wearing masks, half the people weren't wearing masks. I've just loaded up our government website. The best way I look at this, again, we're not really talking about watches, but I'm just going to throw this in here anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to get back to watches, trust me.
We'll get back to watches. I mean, you were asking about Dubai and COVID, so we're just linking straight across.
Yeah, I'm curious.
So, there's a website we've got in Scotland through our NHS system, our government portal. And on there's one page that I check almost religiously daily. And it tells you the stats. It tells you cases, deaths, people in intensive care, and how many people are in hospital. And you can go back on history and check this. So I do this occasionally. I look at today, I look at a month ago, a previous month, et cetera, et cetera. And the numbers have been dropping for the past 3 months. It was at maybe 2,000, then it was at 15, it was 1,200. We're talking about people in hospital. And then this week it's dropped from about 600 to 550, and we're now under the 500 mark. And with 35 people in intensive care and 9 reported deaths today. Yesterday it was a bit bigger, the day before it was a bit bigger. So the figures don't really correlate. Yeah, the cases are getting more, perhaps, but the hospitalizations, people getting ill, people getting intensive care treatment, people dying, at least in Scotland, the hard figures from the government that the media don't cover tells a different story.
All I know from the UK is they started to cancel a bunch of Premier League soccer games because of guys getting sick, but I don't know how sick or whatever. But
it's a weird one. But we're very, very bored of it. I had to cancel, like probably you guys as well. I cancelled my trip to Baselworld 2020. I had whatever it was called, Watches and Wonders, I cancelled. I had a trip to Geneva Motor Show that got killed last year, same again. And then just a month ago there, the Geneva Motor Show for 2022, it got cancelled. And loads of things I was looking forward to, they've all been kind of knocked in the head. Even a trip we had to Raketa, the Russian watch manufacturer, we were going across to see them build our limited edition watch and also go to a trip to Roscosmos, which is their version of NASA. And that got cancelled due to COVID over there. Or perhaps because they were planning on invading another country. I don't know.
Just making noise on borders again, I'm sure.
So watches.
Watches. Well,
what
we talked about,
been interested in then?
Well, on this show in the past few weeks, we've sort of done a few things, right? We sent John to have a junket with Breitling.
Right, can I stop you there? I'm going to stop you there. Can you guys please, please do me a favor?
Yeah.
Make your shows a little bit longer.
No.
Oh, please, for Christmas. Because I'm just getting into the flow, and then it's like, yeah, guys, thanks for listening. Catch you next
time. It's been 30 minutes. We'll see you. Which is, by the way, the time right now.
But yes, we're at 30 minutes. We can go a little longer today.
Because today is special, and because you asked, today we will go slightly longer.
Oh, thank you.
I will say some weeks it's easier to go longer than others. Some weeks it's like, yeah, nothing has happened this week, so we're just going to cut this at like 24 minutes.
Yeah.
Other weeks where it's like, wow, a ton of stuff was announced and we have very strong opinions. Those are easier, but the life of a content creator, I guess.
Well, I'm that's not all just the time we have. Myself. Thank you for listening. And this has been the Hour Time Show. No, I won't. I gave you a little longer.
The thing is, when I mentioned you guys on our platform, and we talk about Hodinkee Radio, we talk about Warren Wound and stuff, but we don't really go into the weeds past those guys because I don't know why. I know why, actually. I don't have time to listen to other podcasts. So there is literally 3 watch podcasts in my feed, of which you guys are one of them. And when I mentioned you, people went to check you out that I hadn't heard before and came back to me saying, I can't get enough of these guys. These guys are like on it, that they don't care. They're like you Scottish Watches folks. It's a passion. They're not trying to pretend they're something they're not. And we've had an influx of folks saying, that's great. We would like to hear more of their stuff. So that's why we're saying, yeah, if you can stretch another 5 minutes.
I'm curious as to like people's really, because I'm also fairly new to the watch thing. Like the politics, like what podcasts, what websites hate other websites. And to me, it's like, we're literally talking about what, like, this is not, and I get some, some people's livelihoods, but I guess we've never taken it super deathly seriously, I guess.
We used to.
Yeah.
We used to. So this show was founded with John and Ariel Adams, the history of this show, a long, long time ago.
Right.
And I used to write with Ariel at a blog to read before it was a blog to watch. And we took over the show, we brought it back here, and we put it through various generations of it, but we've always been pretty much, we don't care. There are no sacred cows here. We just don't. We just like the watches and we just want to have fun.
Well, you asked a question there about the nefarious behind the scenes stuff. Now, Scottish Watches is a podcast. We have a website. We do occasional videos on YouTube. We've got an Instagram thing. It is not really a watch media entity. It never has been. That's not what we want to do with it. And we've been doing this for 3 years and we're happy. But I would say in the last maybe year or so, probably since COVID, all the guys you would think would be competitors, like your Time and Tide, your Revolution, they've teamed up on things. A Blog to Watch has teamed up with us on things. Monochrome and Fratello, all these folks now seem to help each other out. If somebody's got a limited edition, the rest of the press guys will push it out there.
Yes, I have noticed that recently.
Yeah, we sort of ticked people off for a little bit. So we, a few years ago, We constantly get people asking, right, how much to publish a review, right? People will say, we'd like to get a review written. How much do we have to pay to get a review written? Our answer is always nothing. We don't take money for reviews. Our deal is you send us a watch, we write about it, and then we send it back. Mm-hmm. And we would like to ask you to pay for its return label. Like, we don't want to pay the return shipping. We want you to pay the return shipping, but that's the only cost.
Yeah.
Just because we don't want to be out of pocket on that.
Of course.
A few years ago, someone wrote to us and said, no, you're kidding, right? And I was like, no, we're not kidding. They sent us the rate card of one of the competing watch companies, and it was like $2,000 to publish a review.
Whoa.
Which I read that, and you pointed that to me a few months ago, and I was like stunned. I was like, wow. Because it was a bigger site, one that even me, still fairly new to this space, was like, oh yeah, those guys are good. And to see that they were charging thousands of dollars for what effectively is a bunch of pictures and like 1,000-ish words.
500,000 words, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, man, I used to like, that's incredible
that's
to me.
Good
that
money.
That exists. Yeah.
That's advertorial, really.
Yes, I mean, it 100% is like, you're paying, I'll write nice words about your thing if you pay me, which, ultimately, and this is something John has strong opinions on because he's been in the traditional media space, and that's my background with him, regular media. It's like, it is really, does that even matter? Does like today's 18-year-old just scrolling Instagram looking at pictures of like sneakers and football and like hot girls and like a watch? Like, does he care that like some site is getting paid $1,000 to write about this micro brand? I don't know. That's a good question. To us, it's like, that's just weird,
No, I don't think you can do that. This is something that I have spoken about with different people recently. I was involved in publishing myself 20 years ago. I used to run car magazines when the Fast and Furious came out, and it was all performance tuning and neon lights. I did all that jazz. And then I did some work for newspapers as well. So I've got a little bit of normal experience, then the watch stuff. But the whole paying for reviews, that's something that we've never done. What we do offer, if somebody is interested, is we have adverts. We have sponsored shows, which we do with the likes of eBay and different brands like Christopher Ward, or we'll do like full mini-series. We've done one recently with Mont Blanc, but we would never say, give us money, give us a watch, we'll review it, we'll say great things about it, because that is just absolutely shit.
Yeah. Well, I made fun of John for going on the Breitling junket, so...
Well, junkets are absolutely fine. I mean, back when I was doing the car stuff, we would get dragged out to Audi and driven around the place, but it would never make me say better things about the product. You've got to have a separation.
Yeah, I used to have a friend who did public relations for a big liquor brand, and she sort of described like her job was basically to like fly around editors from like Esquire magazine or whatever the heck magazine and just get them. But then you talk to these guys and they're like so nonplussed and they're so jaded after like not even a long time of doing that. It is very interesting to see, like, you know, as influencers rise and as like media kind of like melts into online content, the rules and regulations and people's attitudes towards all this stuff. I would love to like fast forward like 20 years and to see how this all shakes out, because I have no idea.
Well, I mean, sponsorship and product placement's been going since whenever. I remember recently watching the movie Rush, which was about a couple of Formula One drivers back in the, I think it was the 70s. And even back then, it was all the product placement and advertising and showing off things when they weren't supposed to. Look at David Beckham wearing watches when he goes to tennis matches and things. So it's just part and parcel. I think the last...
That's how the Hoyer Monaco got placed in that Steve McQueen movie.
Yeah,
exactly. Is that really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Neither did Steve McQueen.
That was one of the first ones. Yeah, I remember hearing all about that. And I think what's also kind of funny, although I shouldn't use the word funny, the last year and a bit with COVID, that whole Instagrammer, influencer type thing, it died off because people couldn't travel. The whole Fire Festival thing would never have happened a year ago because nobody could go to it or nobody could promote it. And that's been one of the benefits, I think, as well, of the last year, that it's democratized and equalized the playing field for everybody. We said a year ago on the show that a micro brand that's clever, like Zelos or AN Other, that comes out with something, even the guys at Spinnaker who we deal with, they were on a level playing field with Rolex, because suddenly all Rolex could do would be buying Instagram adverts at the same size and the same frequency as these other guys versus billboards and all the stuff you would see in an airport.
Right.
Yeah. So it's been an interesting year or two.
All right. So talking watches for just a moment. We've been on a tear the past couple episodes about affordable watches.
Yeah.
And to the point of John buying a couple off of AliExpress and enjoying them.
Super affordable, right? Okay.
Right, right. So what is your affordable pick? What is the best affordable watch you've ever gotten? And what is the worst one?
Oh, right. Okay. Is this watches that we've had into review that I have seen? I've bought?
Prefer watches you've bought, but I'll also accept watches that
I guess
had
that also depends, like, what is affordable? Like, if you're a banker,
Let's go sub $1,000. Let's go $500 also.
Okay. I would say, I mentioned just a second ago there, Zelos. Hmm. Fantastic micro brand that when you get the product across and you look at it, an anecdote that I talk about in the show is I got one sent to me about a year and a half ago. And it was so quick arriving. We were about to record the show, slapped it on my wrist, thought, wow, that's really nice. Started speaking about it on the show with a guest, and they said, how much is it? And I thought, I'm looking at it thinking maybe, I don't know, $800, $1,000. And it was $300.
Wow.
And it was just insanely good value. Same with the guys at Nodus. Their products, again, I got a Sector Sport sent across to check out. Again, thought it was probably $700+, and I think it came in around about £300 delivered. So that was good. And then I've bought some real mints from Alibaba, AliExpress, and all the rest of it. Some of the Pagani Design homage watches.
Yes. I know that.
So they can extract a lot of blood from your wrist depending on how sharp the catches are on them. So I'd say those ones, where people buy things that are super cheap, they expect it to work for more than a couple of months, or they decide to have a shower with it and don't realize that, yeah, that is not really 200 meters water resistant. They're probably the ones I would keep away from.
Hmm.
I had a Pagani, either Pagani, I think it was a Pagani, a No Time to Die kind of homage.
Yeah.
It looked cool, but like if like upon closer inspection, the loom on, I think maybe it was the hour hand was just like very bad. And I was like, oh, now I can't unsee this. I ended up just selling it for I basically broke even on it. But I was like, you know what? Maybe this person will not be bothered by that. But yeah, I know those watches very well.
Well, see, for the price though, I mean, you can't beat a Hulk clone with a ceramic bezel and a sapphire crystal for $150 or whatever they're going for now. That is not bad. And if it lasts a little while,
that's like buying stuff at cost.
Yeah, it's insane. But no, the micro brands that are doing it, as I said, Zelos, Nodus, and there's probably a handful of other ones that I think are offering massive value for money.
Yeah, I would put Hampton into that list back when Hampton was shipping.
Oh, now that's a sore subject, that one.
Is it?
Do you not know?
We'll talk about that after the call then.
All I can say to listeners is, if you're interested in that story, go to the Hampton Watches Kickstarter page and read the comments.
It's nightmarish, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow. And the guy has actually stopped replying to me, because I used to speak to Ross fairly regularly. He would ask me for advice. Don't know why, but he did. And yeah. Then after a large amount of time, I contacted him again and said, what's happening? We're constantly getting people asking us. And he just read my message, ignored it, sent me another one, read that, ignored it. And I thought, oh, well, sold you.
No, I have a lot of love for Ross, and it's a very sad story that's happening there. So we will talk more about that after the show.
Ooh. Yeah, you'll have to sign up for the Patreon to hear that one, guys.
That was another thing I didn't realize, you know, heading into like how prominent Kickstarter still was in the watch community, and how many, shenanigans are going on. I just didn't realize it was still like, because I remember Kickstarter from like, again, the Pebble days, like a decade ago, and it was new and shiny. There were so many exciting projects. I had no idea it was still like a thing, particularly in watches, and that there were so many kind of like horror stories of like guys not shipping things or just like insane delays. Yeah, that was very interesting to me.
Well, you'll like this, Nick. Kickstarter is getting into cryptocurrency.
Oh, are they? Oh, great.
Oh, they are. Yeah, it's going to be perfect.
What is the point of it? I'll look at it.
Don't even.
Oh, are we going to talk about watch NFTs next? Let's not.
Probably.
Let's not. Yeah. Really not.
Yeah.
No, Kickstarter, I mean, it's not just watches. That's the thing. When you're involved in a hobby, you only have tunnel vision for what you're looking at in front of you. But I see Kickstarter videos on YouTube. There's one called Kick Scammers, and it's mainly video game related, and they go through all the different technology things where somebody's put something online and it's not real or it's a fake product. But I think it's getting better. I mean, the guys at Studio Underdog, I don't know if you've heard of them, they released the Watermelon watch this year. And it's not a company, it's one guy in his house who's young, he's in his early 20s, used to work for a large reseller brand type watch company, went out on his own when COVID happened and he lost his job. But he started on Kickstarter and he's delivering watches, and they're fantastic and they're unique looking. So there's good stories and there's bad stories. You just have to be careful with things, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so shall we close this out? Do you want to try and play the car game, Nick, or do we want to just close it out?
Do you know? Oh, you do know that.
He was a car journalist.
Okay, I did not know that. So yeah, see? I think that's an entirely appropriate way to kind of wrap up the show. Yes,
20 years ago.
The way this game goes is that you pick a watch and then you kind of equate it to a car model.
Okay.
So you might say that a quartz watch, like pick a really good quartz watch, a reliable quartz watch. Either the Grand Seiko or the Citizen. And you say that is like the very best Toyota that's made. Maybe a Grand Seiko is like a Lexus, because they're both reliable. They're both that, but they're not very inspiring.
Okay.
Right. And so then you pick something like the Chaikin Joker.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of car is that?
Oh, that's a, let me think. That would be a oh, what did they call it? They changed the name of it. The Prowler. Remember that from about 20 years ago, 25 years
wow,
ago?
Wow, the Plymouth Prowler.
The Plymouth Prowler. They changed it from Plymouth to something else afterwards, and I couldn't remember the name, but yeah, I would say that.
That's excellent. That's a good call. Nick, pick one.
Because remember, it was purple as well, and there's been purple jokers and stuff.
It was. It was metallic purple. Mm-hmm. And it had those big front bumpers on the front of it, yeah.
Yep. Very slow engine, though.
What is, you know, the moon watch? Everyone knows what that is. You don't have to be, what do you think of when you think of the good old-fashioned moon watch?
Oh, comparing it to a car, I don't know, because I wasn't thinking along those lines when you asked the question earlier. Let me think. The Moonwatch, tried, tested, reliable technology. It's been running for many decades, not really updated much in the looks department.
Still desired and desirable.
Desired and desirable, but it's also economical versus the competition. So that rules out the 911 that hasn't changed much in the looks department. It has been iterative and evolutionary rather than revolutionary. Don't know. Moonwatch. I was actually going to come up with my own one, which I'll tell you about if you want.
The problem here is I know nothing about cars, so I'm like,
Go ahead. Well, right in front of me, as we spoke about, what I've got on the wrist just now is the Orage Tourbillon 1. Favorite watch of the moment, has been for the last month. And like you said, it's skeletonized. You can see through it. It's got a lattice grid arrangement on it. That would remind me of the Ariel Atom.
Yes.
Right? Because you can see through it. It's got that mechano structure to it. They're
very
handmade,
bespoke kind of thing. Yeah.
Very bespoke, high performance, great technology. I mean, this is silicon escapement. It's anti-magnetic. It's got a titanium carousel for the tourbillon. The Ariel Atom, same idea. You know, it's all space age technology, high quality things, great performance, low production, handmade. So that's what I would equate this to.
Nice going. Good call. Hmm? Yeah.
I'm on Wikipedia. I've never heard of that vehicle, so I just
that vehicle is well known for being on Top Gear and basically ripping Jeremy Clarkson's face off.
Yes, that's the one. It's like he's got the leaf blower in his face.
Yes,
his cheeks puff up.
Oh, I see the images now. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That is a wicked car. It's a go kart for the road or the track.
It is. It really is. I mean, it has no body to it. It's just tubes. It's a series of tubes.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a series of tubes. Yeah, it's insane. I've been in one twice. I wasn't allowed to drive it. I was allowed to drive one of them, and the other one was an adaption. And the one I was allowed to drive, I think they detuned it because it didn't seem to go as quick for me as it did for other people, and that's not my skill. But no, they're fantastic. Not very good in Scotland because they don't have any way of covering the roof if it starts raining, but they're absolute weapons. Brilliant fun.
Yeah. Gosh. Pick a watch for me.
For you, okay, let's go for the ProPilot X from Auris.
The ProPilot from Auris. Okay.
The X edition.
The X. Okay, so the X, it's a titanium case. It's kind of got a skeletonized dial, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Ooh, and a lovely little bracelet. And this is interesting. It's got sort of that, how would I call that bezel? That's an interesting bezel. What does this car remind me of in a car? This is something that's precision. This is something I know, and you're going to think I'm nuts, but I think I know. About 15 to 20 years ago, there was this sort of design language in cars. Chris Bangle pioneered it, and Cadillac had it, and it was where everything had to have a sharp and creased edge.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Not really, no.
No, so like the original Cadillac CTS or the CTS-V or the Z4, the Z4. Kind of thing. Chris Bangle had imposed on the BMW sharp lines that interrupted these clean surfaces. And that's what this is reminding me of, is sort of a very precise either BMW or Cadillac from that time period, where there were very crisp, sharp edges, well-defined, none of these rounded bubble kind of things.
Yeah. That's quite good. Yeah, I'll go with that.
I will smile and nod.
Like, I think they used to call that fire and ice design language or something, but it was all, everything had to be crisp. It was like the car was folded instead of formed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how the looks of things in the car world do change. We had, I don't know if you know the name, Frank Stephenson.
Tell me.
He designed a lot of different things. He helped design the Escort Cosworth back in the day. It was him that worked on the Whaletail. He designed the new Mini for BMW back in, what was that, 1999 to 2001, there or thereabouts. Yeah. He's also worked at McLaren, worked in various projects there, plus Formula One. We had him in the show talking about industrial design, car design, watch design, and how you can take certain aspects, like we mentioned earlier, forged carbon, titanium, all these silicon parts, and you take that from motorsport, aerospace, all kinds of technologies there, drag them across, and that the design language as well, into watches like Roger Dubuis, when they had the tie-in with Lamborghini, and they used the same rubber on the strap from the tires on the car, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting conversation. There's always a good tie-in between cars and watches. Something I've found.
It is. And, you know, it's one of those things where it can go very, very well, like the Lamborghini that you mentioned, or it can go very, very wrong.
What would you say is the worst wrong one?
There was one a few years ago, and it was done in partnership, I think, with Ralph Lauren. And the idea was that Ralph Lauren, clothing designer, owned a vintage car from the 1930s, let's say. And he liked very much the gauge package on the dashboard. And so this watch that he was doing in partnership with someone else drew on the gauge and made that into the watch face. And it's always just sort of the laziest and yet most difficult way to try and bring a car into the watch is just by bringing the gauge package and turning it into the dial.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because you know, entirely different scales, right? The speedometer goes from 0 to 120, 150, whatever. It doesn't translate well. The numerals don't translate well. And it just ended up not working.
Yeah. It's like some watches just don't work. And then some kind of do, like the, so what, Reservoir watches, they're quite good, but hard to tell the time on initially.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen ones that have tried to put a steering wheel on the face of the dial, and it's like, that's not it. What are you trying to capture from motorsport? What are you trying to bring over? The ones that have liveries, right? The livery ones are great, but you can only do so many because it's just stripes, right? You get Gulf stripes. You get someone else's stripes. It's stripes. So it doesn't really take you very far beyond that. But they at least work. They're at least coherent.
Yeah. Have you heard of a brand from the UK called Zero West?
I haven't had one of those in hand.
Right. But you have heard of them.
I think so.
Yeah. They do some pretty cool designs that link motorsport, vintage car racing, and loads of different things, aircrafts and whatnot, and they've got a very unique case design that ties in, and they managed to do it quite well. They're a micro brand, comparatively speaking, but they managed to nail it pretty well most of the time from all the stuff that I've seen. But you're right, some of the bigger ones, some of the, your Breitling for Bentley or whatever it was called, some of them didn't look great. The Range Rover tie-ins with Zenith, some did, some didn't. It's very hit and miss, and you would think when you've got the marketing power and the think tanks at all these different massive companies and the agencies, that at some point somebody would say, this is shit, let's not do this. But they just carry on anyway.
Yeah. Well, these projects get momentum, right? When you're a micro brand, it's just yourself, maybe yourself and one other person doing something. Mm-hmm. You can pull the brakes. You can stop. When you've got teams and multiple people and multiple decision makers, these things get momentum and they get out of control, and it can be hard to pull the brakes.
Good point. Yeah.
And I think you see that in cars too, right? As a car journalist, you'd see how a concept car that looks fantastic becomes a production vehicle that looks uninspiring.
Yes.
Becomes mediocre.
Always. Yeah.
And it's all the way along. There were all these people that made decisions and the thing had momentum and you couldn't stop that train from coming.
Mm-hmm. No, that is true. It's something that was always annoying when you saw the concepts coming out in Paris or Geneva or Frankfurt and then the release edition, even back when the Audi TT was coming out and the prototypes and the concepts looked like something out of iRobot and then it didn't when it appeared in the forecourts. So, but that's like, at least in the watch world, if something looks crazy in the design stage, usually it ends up looking crazy on the wrist.
Generally, yeah. But
look at your Richard Mille's, your Zenith Defy 21s. Mm-hmm. They're just insane looking. And then they appear on the wrist just looking just as crazy.
I wonder if it's easier when you're working on one of those projects to remain more faithful to what inspired you to make it in the first place.
Maybe it's because the engineering and the design, from what I can tell, in the watch industry, is so closely linked versus the person that does the drawings and the illustrations and the renders at a car place versus the engineers that have to make it work in a wind tunnel. Mm-hmm. It could be the fact that you don't really need a wind tunnel for a watch. Yet.
That must be it, yeah.
That must be it, yeah.
All right, well, this feels like a good stopping point. We've come to the end of an incredibly long episode. I hope you've managed to stay with us all the way through.
This is nearly an hour. This is one of the longer ones.
This is a banner episode. We accepted and granted your wish.
Thank you.
Well, we give the people what they want. Apparently, they want
let's never do that again.
Our time.
Yeah, let's not do that again.
Listen, one of the guys that got in touch with us to say that he started listening to you, he was downloading all your back catalogue because he had a large international journey, a flight, and he didn't have enough of your episodes to cram in that he managed to download in time because we're short. So there you go.
Okay.
Well, I like to give evidence when I ask for requests.
We are not suitable for international flights.
Exactly. Short journeys only. Ubers and Lyfts.
Yep. This has been the Hour Time Show, the show by Watch Geeks for Watch Geeks. We'll be back next week. I'm Victor Marks.
I'm Nicholas De Leon.
And I'm Ricky from Scottish Watches.
Yes, Ricky. Thank you for joining us.
No problem at all. And you guys are most welcome on our show anytime you like.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Hour Time Show, the official podcast of wristwatchreview.com. Feel free to email us at tips@wristwatchreview.com with your feedback and suggestions. And please be sure to visit wristwatchreview.com and wristwatchreview on Instagram for more fun watch content. Have a nice day.